ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमपि शचीपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्यागजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Srila Prabhupada stated that the potency of chanting done in the temple is increased 1,000 times compared to that done elsewhere. Therefore, he said, so many people go to places like Vrindavan to chant. Now, we're talking about attitude in devotional service. So, someone who's already seen Krishna 24 hours daily, including the time when apparently sleeping, Premandana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santasa Daiva Hridyeshu Vilokayanti Yang Shyama Sundaram Achintya Guna Swarupam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. For such a devotee who's always seeing the inconceivable, beautiful, blackish form of Krishna manifested in his heart and manifested to his eyes and manifested to his nose, and all his senses are enlivened by Krishna due to his having pure love of Krishna. For such a devotee, he can chant anywhere. He's in Vrindavan always. But still we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go to Vrindavan and his ecstasy increased, which was anyway increasing all the time, because spiritual life is not static, it's ecstatic. But his ecstasy increased more and more as he even thought of Vrindavan, got close to Vrindavan, came to Vrindavan. But holy places are holy places. That's why they're called holy places. They're meant to be holy. They're meant to, or they do uplift us, otherwise we wouldn't call them holy places. As I've discussed in previous talks, there may be many unholy things going on in holy places. Srila Prabhupada writes in one purport that there are many pseudo-transcendentalists even at places of pilgrimage. So we might wonder what's better, to be alone in a room during the lockdown chanting, or with some wild Sahajiya or Mayavadi in Vrindavan. If we can link with Vrindavan, then we can do so anywhere. I'll get through to that point later, how sadhus are tirthas. And even in Vrindavan, bad association. Better to be in good association somewhere else. Of course, good and bad are relative terms, but as Srila Prabhupada said, there are many Mayavadis in Vrindavan, and there are also many Sahajiyas. As Srila Prabhupada explains, I'll read another purport now. When the world becomes degraded, this is Srila Prabhupada, when the world becomes degraded, civilization becomes demoniac. And for the common man, the rectum and the genitals are taken very seriously as the centers of all activity. It's not bridge preaching. It's straight in the face. The common man, the common man. We have in North India the Aam Aadmi Party, the common man party. So here's Srila Prabhupada, he's pointing out that the common man, they take very seriously the rectum and the genitals. And then Srila Prabhupada goes on to state, even in such a sacred place as Vrindavan, India, unintelligent men pass off this rectal and genital business as spiritual activity. Yeah, I mean, real sahajiyas, in the full sense of the term, there's a sahajiya sampradaya, upper sampradaya. They have a whole interpretation of Radha Krishna Leela, and what it comes down to is they have sex. And the, I don't know exactly, I don't remember, but the passing of semen is called prem and things like this. It's monkey business. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada continuing. Such people are called sahajiya. According to their philosophy, through sexual indulgence, one can elevate oneself to the spiritual platform. From these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, however, we can understand that the desires for sexual satisfaction are meant for the arvak, the lowest among men. To rectify these rascals and fools is very difficult. After all, the sex desires of the common man are condemned in these verses. The word durmata means wrongly directed, and niriti means sinful activity. Although this clearly indicates that sex indulgence is abominable and misdirected even from the ordinary point of view, the sahajiyas nonetheless pass themselves off as devotees conducting spiritual activities. For this reason, Vrindavan is no longer visited by intelligent men. I'll just take a break from reading this to explain that a little bit. Vrindavan is no longer visited by intelligent men. Well, I'll read a little more because Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain this a bit. We are often asked why we have made our center in Vrindavan. From the external point of view, it can be concluded that Vrindavan has become degenerate due to these sahajiya activities. Yet from the spiritual point of view, Vrindavan is the only place where all these sinful persons can be rectified by means of taking birth in the forms of dogs, hogs, and monkeys. By living in Vrindavan as a dog, hog, or monkey, the living entity can be elevated to the spiritual platform in the next life. So why is it that intelligent men don't visit Vrindavan? People ask, why are you making your center in Vrindavan? Srila Prabhupada in the early 1970s started making a center in Vrindavan. Actually, he wavered somewhat about this. He had an idea very early on in his, well, this would be the late 1960s. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish an American house in Vrindavan, in which devotees from America and other countries could come to learn about Krishna consciousness. But then later he thought that he doesn't want a center in Vrindavan because there's so much dacoity and there's so much bad association. The situation has changed a lot, largely due to Srila Prabhupada's establishing Krishna Balaram Temple, which really changed everything from the sociological, economic, And yeah, perspective. I mean, Krishna is Krishna in Vrindavan, and that didn't change. But the whole ethos of Vrindavan changed. And so many people say, it's now respectable to go to Vrindavan. Otherwise, people thought, quote-unquote respectable people, from Delhi especially, but not only Delhi, there are many towns nearby where there are respectable people, such as Agra and Aligarh, where there are many well-to-do people and educated people who wouldn't want to go to Vrindavan. One, because it's all dirty and broken down, all very poor people, and because Vrindavan was famous for licentiousness. It was famous for the Babaji's having illicit sex, and so many Bengali widows go there. Prabhupada explains in another purport that there are some women who think that it's prestigious to have a child by a sadhu. So they go to Vrindavan to seek out sadhus. And so there are some men who become sadhus to take advantage of this foolish idea. So it's really cheaters and the cheated going on. You may know, as Srila Prabhupada discussed this once, how during the short and not regretted by many regime of Sanjay Gandhi, the first son of Indira Gandhi, who was practically running the country almost like a dictator for some time. So he, in a measure to cut India's population explosion, he instituted forcible sterilization of men. And among the groups who were targeted were the Babaji's of Vrindavan. So Prabhupada pointed out, well, if they were actually renunciants and following the rules and regulations, they wouldn't be having sex and there wouldn't be any need to sterilize them. So it's just the fact that it was well known that they were having sex here and there and then producing illicit children here and there. So they became candidates for sterilization. But things have changed, and bhakti has become respectable in Indian society. It was a process started in the 19th century because there was so much downfall of the Vaishnav Sampradaya, that the Gauriya Vaishnavas in Bengal were thought of as just a very low class. I've discussed that to some extent in Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. And there was a process started by certain members of the Bhadralok, the educated, Western educated mostly, class in Bengal. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not the only one, the Shishir Kumar Ghosh was another famous one. There were several who made magazines in Bengali and promoted Vaishnavism among their own circle. And that was taken forward in the next generation by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur by establishing Mayapur, that was discovered by Jagannath, well, discovered by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, rediscovered by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, confirmed by Jagannath Das Babaji, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati really developed Mayapur as a pilgrimage place. And he very strongly denounced the activities of the Sahajiyas who were giving Vaishnavism a bad name. But it's really, this endeavor has really come to full circle with, or come to completion with Srila Prabhupada preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world, and massive preaching of Krishna consciousness, and establishing the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan. Particularly in Vrindavan, it has changed the ethos of Vrindavan, upgraded it in so many ways. And some may say it's downgraded it in some ways. Well, unfortunately, Vrindavan has become commercialized, but it's only become commercialized because so many people were going there, whereas people were not going. Hardly respectable people would not go there. So attitude in devotional service and attitude in visiting holy places. One shouldn't go to Vrindavan to become a sahajiya. Although Srila Prabhupada writes here that in one sense, it's good, if you're going to be a sahajiya, it's good to be in Vrindavan. Because then you die, you become a dog, or a hog, a camel, or a monkey, something like this, and then the next time around, you get liberation. But that's not wanted. Then that's not laudable. That I'm going to indulge in illicit activities. So let me go to Vrindavan and get liberated and go to Krishna also. One may get kicked out of Vrindavan by Vrinda Devi or Dhameshwar Mahadev. They may not allow. But anyway, why do that? Why should anyone have such a low propensity as to indulge in sex life when he's got Krishna consciousness? So, various other considerations, considering one's attitude in visiting holy places. It's not that one can be sinful or impious, go to a holy place and be very good for some time, and then come back and go on with all one's sinful and impious activities. That we are reminded of the, what we call the ayappas. They're not actually ayappas, they're ayappa devotees, but we call them ayappas for short. And ayappa is supposed to be, according to legend, although we didn't find any shastric evidence, this the son of Mohini Murti from Shiva. We don't find anything, but it's become a big cult. And there are ayappa is the most popular name. There are others, you'll know better than me. Manikandan is another name. So they have the idea. 40 days you follow the vow, and then you go back to smoking, drinking, fornicating, and things like that. Maybe not fornicating so much. So maybe they do that during the 40 days. At least in my experience, as I've personally seen. But that may have been a stray case also. So, different channel. Here's, I've found a quote from Mahanirvana Tantra, of all works. It's a Shakta work, a Tantra. Well, it's a Tantric work. But it states that those who... Now, this can't be from Mahanirvana Tantra exactly like this, because it's a tantra, that's a tantric work, and tantras don't accept the Vedas. But anyway, for those who, neglecting the study of the Vedas, the service of their mother and father, and the protection of their wife, go to places of pilgrimage, those holy places are turned into hell. So you've got to follow your basic karma, basic pious life. Without doing that, the holy place may not reciprocate, according to this quote. Another saying, who has got God in his heart, has him in the holy place also. If you don't have God in your heart, you won't find him in the holy place also. Which is an extreme statement, because God is in everyone's heart, and persons who go to holy places, they have, it's not that you have to become fully realized and then you go to a holy place, but then you don't need to go because you already realize God. That this Asaram, Yashomati Nandan Prabhu told me he'd seen this. Asaram used to be popular, his speeches on TV, and saying that Tukaram, one day he went, every day he went to the temple of Vital in Pandharpur, and one day Vital told him, Vital means Krishna, the deity, told him, oh, you don't need to come anymore. You don't come and see me. Why not? Now you're perfect, now you became me, so no need to come and see me. This is rascaldom. Rascaldom. They locked him up for various crimes, but this kind of thing they should lock up for. Other things are they're not good, the things he's accused of, but this cheating. So in other words, this revered saint of Bengal is saying this, but who is that revered saint? Well, it's the same Joto Mat Toto Patwala. So it's he's discouraging people from going to holy places in this way. But there is value of going to holy places. So internal tirthas. There are internal tirthas. Actually, there are three main classes of tirthas. There's bhoma, the ones that we see on the earth. Jangam, moving tirthas, which means sadhus. And there's a big section on sadhus coming up. Hope you're not getting fed up of this talk about tirthas, because there's quite a lot more to come still. And manasa tirthas. So manasa tirthas means, it's easy to understand, within the mind. Darshana Upanishad, not one of the well-known Upanishads, but one among the 108. It ends with these words, having abandoned one's own internal tirthas. If one goes to the external tirthas, it's looking for pieces of glass, abandoning the gems in one's own heart. So he's not saying don't go to holy places, but look to your heart first. And of course the idea is that if one has any sincerity in going, then the holy place will help us. It's a place for crossing. But not everyone crosses. One has to be able to pay the fare to the boatman. Or, well, if it's a tirtha, you can, well, the English word ford means where you can walk through. And tirtha means a place of crossing. So you may go by boat also. It means it's a place where the river is narrow and shallow, and usually rivers are not narrow and shallow at the same place, but either shallow or narrow, and the river is not too wild, so it's easy to cross compared to other places. And there may be other factors also there are not forests with tigers all around, or a place where it's protected by a good king and there are not many gundas and hooligans. So there may be different factors which make it a favorable place for crossing. But not everyone can go. If you have to pay the boatman, you don't have the money and you can't go. So to cross to the spiritual world, one needs to be purified. So we can say that if we don't fully cross, the tirtha also gives us some occupation by which we can earn some money to pay the fare to go over. It engages us in activities. It engages us in religious activities by which we can become qualified to go over, even if we're not immediately ready to go. So the point is that it's not just taking the body to a holy place, but one has to go with full heart with the intention to purify the heart. And especially talking here about the tirthas, which help us to come closer to Krishna and cross out of this material world and go to Krishna, rather than those tirthas which are of demigods and are known for helping people to cross over temporary and temporal problems in their lives. Then, of course, as I've many times pointed out, most people go to many Vaishnava holy places for material benefits also. And here in South India, again, Tirumalai Srinivas is famous for that. But if we think of Nathdwara, people go there, it's not the same mood. It seems people may have material desires, but a lot of people come just with a mood of bhakti. What do you think? It's more like, Jai Ho! They're very happy to see him, to be there. And there are so many prayers by Vallabhacharya and Gosaiji, who the next in the parampara after him, so many prayers, which just, it's not saying, you're so great, you can do this, you can do that, but it's, oh, he's so wonderful, he's so beautiful. Every day he's like a new gem every day. So it's a different mood, which is inculcated and to be imbibed. So the manasa tirthas, we're talking about attitude in visiting holy places, and the manasa tirthas, the qualities within our consciousness that help us to cross out of this material world. Ultimately, it's devotion. That bhaktya mama bijanati yavan yaschasvi tatvataha tato mang tatvato gyatva visate tadanantaram. Ultimately, we can enter into the spiritual world with Krishna by pure devotion. But there are symptoms of devotion, and they're mentioned, not exactly angas, but they're qualities which are symptomatic of and favorable to bhakti. Utsaha nisraya dharya tat tat karma pravartanat sangati agasato vrite shadbir bhakti prasiddhyati. Six qualities which are favorable in advancement in devotional service. Enthusiasm, determination, patience, following the standard process, giving up bad association, and living life honestly in the path of the previous, as shown by previous persons, living our lives in a pure way. So these are all very helpful for developing devotion. And even for material benefits, or in general, if we find in the Bhagavatam, there's a long list of qualities we'll find in the first canto, which are supposed to be cultivated by all human beings. So all human beings means everyone within the Varnashram system. Generally, when we find in Shastra human, the term Manava is one term for human society. Manava, Manav Jati. Then it refers to persons within the Varnashram system. And then those who have human body but don't follow Varnashram, they may be termed Amanava. They're not really humans. Se Poshu Boro Duracha. If they don't like to chant the name of Nityananda, that's taking it up another, quite a few rungs. they're animals, actually. Dharmo hitesham, dharma, vanashram dharma. Dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham, dharmenihina pashubhya samanam. humans who don't follow dharma, which means not just, they're just on the level of animals, which means not just being designated as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, but actually following the rules and regulations required. If someone says, I'm Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, but they don't follow the rules, well, in traditional society, they wouldn't be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, because they'd be thrown out, and you have to go with where the chandalas go, or go to the forest with the nishadas. So sometimes devotees are very anxious to see look at some astrological chart. Am I Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya? If you're Brahmin, you have to follow. Not just, I'm a Brahmin. There's so many rules and regulations to be followed. Similarly, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and not so much for sure, but they have to follow something. Otherwise, they're also thrown out. They have to follow some rules. Well, their main rule is to be submissive to the higher classes and serve them. Paricharyatmakam. Paricharyatmakam karma. Their karma, their work, consists of service. That's what they're meant for. So it may not be expected that they have such qualities, but especially brahmanas are expected to develop qualities, and others also, patience, generosity, self-control, and some qualities we'll find more in brahmanas and some in kshatriyas. Like brahmanas are supposed to be very liberal in their outlook, very forgiving, but if everyone in society is very forgiving, then it'll be overtaken by demons who will take advantage of tolerance. So there had to be kshatriyas also. Brahman very forgiving, and kshatriya has to be strict. And he may be moderated by brahmanas also. That if a king is too strict and too inclined to inflict punishment, then he'll be hated by his citizens. But on the other hand, if he doesn't inflict punishment, he's too liberal, then the rogues will prosper. That balance has to be there. Generosity, especially for the brahmanas are generous in giving out knowledge. We have the case of Satyakama Jabala, who was generously treated in terms of giving spiritual knowledge. But dānam is particularly a quality we find in Gita, which is associated with the kshatriyas. So different qualities for different people. Abhayam sattva saṅśuddhi jñāna yoga vivastitihi. These qualities, Śrīla Prabhupāda, following previous commentators, of fearlessness, purification of one's existence, abhayam sattva saṅśuddhi, being situated in jñāna yoga, in knowledge of the self. These are especially for sannyasis. So within the varnashram system, different people have different qualities. And vaishyas, they're supposed to be enthusiastic for production. They'll take a piece of land and make it produce food. Whereas if you give land to someone who doesn't have that tendency, then they won't be able to develop it. So that's a sign of how much one is a good vaishya, how much one has wealth and can distribute it also, not just amassing it, but distributing. So there are various qualities which a human being is supposed to develop. And within varnashram system, if one's a good vaishya, then he can be elevated in the next life, possibly to the status of a brahmana. We find that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when one astrologer came to the house of Jagannath Mishra, and the young boy Nimai asked him to calculate what I was in my previous life, and the astrologer saw, you are the Supreme Brahman, the Absolute Truth, the source of all the universes. And Nimai said, you're not a good astrologer. I know for a fact that I was a cowherd boy in my last life. And because I protected cows very well, therefore I got the chance to become a Brahmin in this life. joking. He's funny. God's funny also. He's not just sitting on a cloud throwing most people into hell. Hell, 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 hell. Okay, you can go to heaven. Hell, hell, hell. Not like that. He's a much, much nicer guy than that. Considerations on going on pilgrimage. When one is in one's own village, there's very strong consideration of purity and impurity, especially for the brahmanas and for everyone, who you can take food from, who you can eat with. You may be a Vaishya, someone else may be a Vaishya, but you can't take with them because they're considered lower than you. And so on. This doesn't apply on pilgrimage. When one's on a journey, all these rules don't apply. Maybe one reason is that it's because it's impossible to work it all out and to arrange it all, whereas in the village everything is well arranged. Everyone knows who's who and what's what. From some people you can take some things, and from other. Do you know this? I think that's lost. From you can take, a brahmana can take milk products from a chandala, because they're always pure. But rice you can take from some people, and fruit you can take from some people. Rice especially, grains, you have to be very, very careful about that. And then even if the food is fried, then you can take, fried means in ghee, but if it's paka and kacha, if it's kacha, then you can't take, and so many, it's all very complicated. But on pilgrimage, it doesn't count. And one reason can be there that also helps to helps one to imbibe a sense that, well, we're all equal before God. Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane gavihasini shuni chaiva svapake cha pandita samadarshina. Learned persons see in the same way, not exactly the same, but in the same way, the learned and humble brahmana, vidyavinaya sampane brahmane, the cow, female, and then the female elephant, hastini, I guess that fits the meter. Dog and the dog eater. So you don't treat them exactly the same. But on the pilgrimage, you may do. You may try to follow as much as possible. And we find that from seeing the old texts that still a brahmana, when he's traveling on pilgrimage, he'll stay in the house of a brahmana, or he'll at least in the house of a caste person. And then he'll be given food and he cooks for himself, because where he came from, you can't be sure. He came from a different province and you don't know where his jati fits exactly on the scale, and he doesn't know where you're from. So you cook for yourself. We find the Taritik Brahmana is described in Chaitanya Bhagavata. He would just wander from place to place to place, worshipping his deity of Gopal wherever he went. And he stayed in Navadvipa at the house of Jagannath Mishra. And Jagannath Mishra's youngest son, Nimai, messed up. He was given food, and that means grains to cook, and he cooked. But the young boy, baby Nimai, well, not exactly baby, toddler Nimai, he messed up his offering each time. Every time he'd cook, and then he'd offer, and then while he was being offered, Nimai would come and eat it. So the point here, we see the brahmanas, they would stay with brahmanas, they could stay with Vaishya, they could stay with kshatriyas also. So there was a whole system, even for especially on pilgrimage routes, there was a whole system set up. And it wasn't that India was totally backward in the past. On the roads, there would be, every so often, there would be resting houses built by the kings, They're taking taxes, and the kings would build resting houses for merchants and pilgrims and for their own government officers who had to travel place to place to collect taxes and see that everything's going on. So there are arrangements for travelers. And then if you stay in a rest house, well, you may be there and maybe Brahmana, and there may be a Kshatriya there also, like this. But we see that the Brahmanas, it depends on how strict they were. They would take food, uncooked grains, they'd have no problem taking from Kshatriyas, even though the Kshatriyas were themselves meat eaters. I'm speaking generally here now. Uncooked grains they'd take, and then they'd cook for themselves. When on pilgrimage, every day is auspicious for performing various rituals. Everything becomes auspicious. It's not that there's an auspicious day. Still, if there's an auspicious day at a holy place, that becomes magnified. So we see that people go to Prayagraj, especially during Magh Mela, the month of Magh, and especially there are certain days which are very auspicious for bathing, especially bathing at that place. And another place, Shraddh, may be emphasized. On this day, you should do Shraddh. Similarly, Kurukshetra, when there's a solar eclipse, people don't go to Prayagraj, they go to Kurukshetra. So, different places they have their own known specialties. So, the rules and regulations, they are meant to be followed on a pilgrimage, but ultimately, it's the devotion and the purity of consciousness that one can bring to it. That's most important. Not that one shouldn't follow all the rules and regulations, and especially in the karma kanda, then when one hasn't developed a very high consciousness, when one is thinking, what can I get? I'll go to a holy place and get a boon from someone. I mean, let me be top of the class. Pray to Lord Shiva. Let me be top of the class. That means others will be I'll get above others. Others will be unhappy. Let me be happy at the cost of others. So it's a low level of consciousness. So for such persons, following the rules and regulations are essential. And if in the karma kanda, if you get anything a little bit wrong, the whole thing is spoiled. That's why in the yagyas, they have the most senior priest will be the one who just checks everything at every moment. Everything's in the right place, everyone's facing the right direction. You're chanting the mantra, especially the mantras, how it's being chanted properly, and in the first place, how the yagya vedi is set up. It has to be exactly right, according to the design given in Shastra. Everything down to every detail has to be exactly correct. And even then things might not work out, as we find in the Bhagavata. I gave that example. It's stated by, I don't remember his name again, the king who asked his ministers, means brahmanas, that, well, I didn't do any sin in this life. How come I didn't get a son? To not have a son, it means to be sinful. It's a sign of being sinful. It's a calamity, because one has to have a son. Putrate kriyate bharya putra pinda prayojanam. If one marries for the sake of having a son, and the son has to offer pinda, which is means one has to offer shraddh, the ceremonies for the forefathers. So if you don't have a son to do that, then you're liable to fall into hell along with all your forefathers. And then you become sinful by not having a son who can help your father. You become sinful by not having a son who can do that for you. And then because of not having a son, then all your sins, you have to take the full reaction. So it's a great calamity not to have a son. So the king asked, how is it? I didn't do any sinful activity. Of course, everyone does, even unknowingly. But for that, there are daily expiations. I did that daily when in the kitchen, when lighting fire, when grinding on the mortar, and in so many ways, living entities will be killed. But then, by following the daily rituals of Karmakanda, especially by chanting Omkar, then these daily sinful activities, the reactions are largely destroyed. But then there are grossly sinful activities also. But the king said, I didn't do any, and looked in his chart and saw in a previous life you did some sinful activity which caused this. And there's always a remedy. There's always a remedy. But as we find in Bhagavatam states, that the remedy itself creates more problems. So what's the solution? Sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja ahantva sarva pabhebhyo mokshayishyami mashucha. Surrender to Krishna, be freed from all sinful reactions. So anyway, in the Karma Kanda, it's especially important to follow all the rules, because one's consciousness is not very elevated anyway. But that won't help us to, that may help us to cross from going to a holy place, may help the materialistic pious person to cross up to the heavenly planets, which for them is a big thing. But Krishna in Bhagavad Gita points out the uselessness of all that. Evam trai dharma anuprapana gata gatam kama kama labhante. There's just, they go and they come, and it's all in the realm of karma, material desire, which Krishna, much earlier than this in Bhagavad Gita, stated is the great enemy. Nitya vairi, the ongoing enemy. Always so. For the persons on lower level of consciousness, rules and regulations are very important. But at the same time, they're supposed to give in charity, and they're enjoined to give in charity without thought of reward. You just give it as a matter of dharma. So the whole system of dharma is meant for purifying the consciousness and bring us up to a higher level than that of the animal, gross, selfish platform. And going on pilgrimage is a very great help in that, because people want results. Kangshanta karmanang siddhim yajanta iha devataha. People want results from their worship of the demigods. So they're enjoined, they're told that, well, you do all these rules, but the more you're pure in heart, the more result you'll get. So it helps to purify that. You have a desire, and the less you desire all these little things, then you can get the big thing. All right, so now you want to go to the heavenly planets, so you have to observe brahmacharya, asteya. These are just basic niyams. Is it yama or niyam? Just basic rule, not stealing. So one controls those gross desires for enjoyment with the idea, later I'll enjoy more. But hopefully in the meantime, your desire goes down for all these things. Or at least one can control them so that one doesn't indulge them in a gross, totally bestial way. It's the Varnashram culture. It's difficult to understand. Why people say, well, Hinduism is very difficult to understand. And of course, most Hindus don't spend a lot of time trying to understand it. They just do whatever they do. But compared to just you accept Jesus in your heart as your savior, and then you're saved. Okay, well, that's pretty simple. What does it mean to accept Jesus in your heart? Or you have to bathe yourself in the blood of Jesus. what does it mean? I don't know if you actually think what it means, it sounds ghastly, but they just, oh, okay, finished, done. Just you have to follow the Bible. Believe in the Bible. Okay, it's pretty. Actually, if you go into the statements in the Bible, you'll find it's not so straightforward. But because the Vedic system deals with many different people and many different stages and levels, and considering their age and their gender, everyone's an individual, so it's tailored for the individual. It's just like Ayurveda is meant, it has general terms, but you don't give medicine. Okay, this one's got the flu, okay, take 3 pills, blah, 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 do this. But it deals with everyone individually, according to their specific, individual, and unique health condition, because everyone is unique in their health condition, their psychological condition. So the Vedic culture, yeah, makes allowance for that, and therefore it's very complex. And people who just superficially look at it, they can't understand it at all, and they reject it as being just a bunch of mumbo jumbo. But that's their failing. And just like in Ayurveda, there are some things you can pick up generally. Just like there are standard rules for everyone, pretty much. Don't eat yogurt at night because it's cooling, and then the night is cool. Although in Kerala, they do it. Maybe because in Kerala, does at least except in the hills, it's hot around the year. But it may be different in different places also, because just like people take the rules of Ayurveda and they try and apply them in America, but they may not all apply there. Or in different parts of the country, it may apply differently because of every area has its own climate, microclimate, and so on. So there are general rules. And again, don't drink coconut water at night, and so many things. But then they're individually, to analyze individually what each person needs, you need a trained Ayurvedic doctor who can understand by feeling your pulse, which is different to feeling the pulse in the Western system, where they just feel the pulse rate. But in Ayurveda, they feel there's different sparrow pulse and crow pulse, and according to the, supposed to be like the movements of the way a sparrow walks and a crow walks and all this kind of thing. So it's very complex, but then it gives you treatment and exactly according to your needs. So in the Vedic culture also, for spiritual advancement, one requires a guru who gives, general is for everyone, but then specific for the individual. And then just like the doctor may have his assistants and this and that and trains them, and then They oversee the general cases, and the more difficult cases, you may have to call in the main doctor, and so on, and so on, and so on. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyavacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.